Mr. Doshi, welcome to Conversation With.
Thank you so much, Lynn. Thank you.
You're very interested in social housing.
Yes.
But why is it that so much social housing in the world is a failure? It ends up turning into a ghetto.
Well, it's out of sight. When it is out of sight, it is out of mind. That's all there is. Because our world is connected to people who want something, who can afford something. This one is the people who cannot afford. They can't pay the fees. They can't have money to build the house. They don't even have land.
Whose fault is this, though, sir? Is it the fault of architects who are not designing things well enough, or is it the fault of politicians?
No, it's a fault of the whole society at large, because we are not concerned. The politicians are only interested in what their purpose is about the vote and the area that they are involved with. Businessman is involved in doing his own business and do it. A poor farmer who is far away from urban areas, fighting himself, producing grains and vegetables and whatnot. So the whole life has been made now for a purpose which is very selfish.
How do we change that perspective then for, you know, urban dwellers like myself? How do we change ourselves from being to caring about it being participatory? You know, what do we do about
this? I think it's just a question of attitude. When you are walking on the street and when you are going to a shop or when you are walking somewhere little away or at the railway station and you see people squatting, sitting, are we ever looking at them if they were related to us? Would we have not looked at them? So they are disconnected. We become oblivious and we only focus of where our relationships stand and where there is an attitude of exchange, getting something out of them. So first question is, how do you create a happy society, a well-being society, a society where our relationships are much better than a third-party relationship?
But isn't that the problem, sir? If we deal with it in such an abstract way, normal policymakers, though, and as well as you, sir, you need a concrete thing to do.
I can tell you it is not abstract. So the first thing to think about is, are we talking about creating a master plan or something in which we are talking of decades of life together? So this is the first thing to do. Now, second one is that once you start thinking about it, then you ask questions that how will they be able to do?
How do we then convince the richer people that you wouldn't end up dragging down the general value of the whole area? Because that's very often what happens whenever public housing is built.
The most important thing to know is family doesn't belong to an individual. A family has family, wife, children and everybody. There is a difference in age group. There are also older people. And everybody needs something, somebody to talk to, somebody to relate to. Children like to go to school together. The ladies have free time. Maybe a lady of the topmost floor can work for the other house, which has a bigger house. So you create a new cyclic order of society in which then everybody is connected one way or the other. So your family is not 306 families, but it is one community. So Indore has 400 houses on the ground. You multiply them three times. The neighbors were not the same community. They were different. So of different religion, different beliefs, but they all own same size of plot. But I'm going to allow them to build as much as they can on top of one another. So even if somebody is richer or a bigger family, he will add a floor. But the whole issue is ownership, feeling that they can do things that they want. They can convert the house into a shop if they want.
So you want an intermingling. And maybe they may not like it in the beginning, but you're saying that it's good for them.
Yeah, so today what happened is, in the last 40 years, they have built the community, and I could not believe myself that they have become proud of themselves. You go there and they smile, and that little house, there is a little plant. They have a little washing machine. They have rented some places. And they have done something which no architect or bylaw can do. So actually through empowerment, through allowing them to grow allow them to aspire, allow them to do what they like, and the neighbor likes. I think if we do that, then it is possible to create a society. And that is what the story is. And why I did, because I had in my childhood certain experiences, and I had seen beggars, and I had seen poor people and whatnot. So I was interested in housing since I graduated.
We have this incredible movement from rural areas into the big cities. What we focus on, though, is shiny glass and steel buildings. What do you then think as an architect of things like, you know, Burj Khalifa or the Shanghai Tower? Is that what architects also do?
Well, actually, our distance is increasing between us and our land and our people, our climate and our wealth. You know, when you grow high, you are also more insecure.
So that so insecurity, all the people who have skyscrapers are insecure.
Insecurity also creates an inferiority complex. And because of that inferiority complex, you want to show off.
So in other words, places like Shanghai or Dubai there, or even Singapore or Kuala Lumpur, they're all showing off with their skyscrapers?
Naturally, I think what I want to do is my country is better, my country is better affordable, and I can do something new, and I will do something which nobody has done. Why does it happen? You don't need to. If you look at these trees around here, do they shout? They don't shout, they grow.
So, Mr. Doshi, if tomorrow somebody came along to you, one of the wealthy governments in the world, or one of the wealthy mayors of one of the big cities, came to you and said, I'd like you to build a wonderful skyscraper. Sky's the limit. Materials, use whatever you want. What would you say? Would you say, yes, absolutely?
No, no, no.
Or would you say
no? There are many ways to do. One is to refuse. Second one is to say, all right, but I will say I can do that for you. But in exchange, you will not ask me a question. I will do what I want to do. And then out of that, I will create a complex of a different kind, in which he will get the tower, but I will get the citizens.
You're very good at driving a bargain, I see, sir. Do you think there is something called Asian architecture? Or is there only good architecture and bad architecture?
Livable architecture, not livable architecture. Or architecture for the theater and architecture for the people.
So there's no such thing as Asian architecture. There are no cultural affiliations.
No, I think, you know, they are there, you know, like, you know, all you don't look like us, or you don't, the other people don't look like all of us. I think that slight distinction is different, but total distinction is what is the problem. I think we have created sharp edges. We have to learn to be little rounded. And I think that's where the life starts. Because to make round is allowing others to get in touch.
This influence from Le Corbusier, one could argue that you see it in all of your work. What was it like?
No, I don't think, you know, what he would think is that, yes, you know, he will say, he's trying and I think he's doing all right.
How do we build then homes, offices, even factories that are, as you say, part of our culture, coherent with our climate, for example? We're sitting here in your house, in the garden, in 45 degrees centigrade of heat. Can you actually build houses that don't need massive air conditioning?
I would say zero is not possible, but one can always see that we can have appropriate percentage of technology and the other larger percentage of understanding of sustainability. And then other thing is that how do we really talk about energy and time and movement? And I think the most important thing is we are getting more and more isolated. And because you get more isolated, you go much farther, then you need your own source of services, you need your own source of equipment and structure and supply. And you really ask people to come from far away there. And that is why we like old cities more. Because we save time, we save energy, we meet people, we find time. Because we have not understood that a human being also needs some time to have a dialogue, Today we have no dialogue.
So the shops should be close by, the places to go in each should be close by.
You should be able to make walkable cities, walkable places.
But a bit of competition surely is also good, isn't it? I mean, after all, sir, we're sitting here because you won the Pritzker Prize.
No, competition is required. Nature also has competition. You know, there are animals which eat other animals and the birds. So I think cyclic order is required.
So would you wish that we had not focused so much about your winning the Pritzker Prize and your winning the Aga Khan Prize, all of these things, that instead of just looking at your buildings and coming to you because you're a good architect?
No, I think though there is a slight difference there, you know. I think these awards are given by experts and then they think, you know, that if this award is given to so and so, then let people go to him or even for him to feel that what he is doing is right. So actually it is honoring that person or recognizing that person, telling him what you are doing we appreciate and so here is what we give you and you go on doing it. So maybe it's an encouragement to multiply.
Do you feel encouraged, sir?
Yes, of course. Of course.
How would you then want to multiply this?
Well, I started multiplying by starting the school. So I try to do that in my way, but also in education. So if you have students, if they learn this, that sustainability is very important, relation with nature and your space is important, energy conservation is very important, public participation is very important.
What is the piece of advice, though, that you got when you were a young architect that somehow has stuck in your brain?
No, when my parents and my grandparents only advised me, respect and be humble.
Is that what you would say to a young architect now?
Yes. I think because, you know, if you can respect, you have a chance to absorb and get something from the other party. But if you don't respect, you will never learn more. So if you want to become wiser, open up, be more porous and generous. And slow over time, you also will get some color added onto your skin, your body and your heart.
For people who don't know so much about architecture, though, what would you say to them? What city would be a good city for you that you would say, go and look at this city? This city will teach you a lot.
I tell you, there are two cities that... No, there are many cities perhaps in India or everywhere else. The old city of Ahmedabad is a great lesson. But important thing was mixed land use. So if I have a shop there and if I have to go for a wedding, then I can go and my wife or my daughter or a son can sit in the shop. If somebody else needs that shop nearby, it is next to your house or you can walk in distance. You save time, you save energy, you continuously work without getting stress, you don't get fear, you are not scared, you know that neighbor will take care of my life, my family, my children. And more than that, I have a lot of time because I don't have to run far away. And then if I have a lot of time, I can go and celebrate my life.
So you're saying you prefer, in other words, cities where there are
mixed land,
and that you don't have this over-specialization.
Compact.
What about a single building? Is there a single building that you think about or look at that makes you smile?
Yes, provided it is generous and it says, shake hands with everybody. Yes.
If you had to choose between being, let's say, an urban planner and being an architect of sort of individual buildings, what would you choose? Or do you think you can be both?
No, I would like to be a human person more than anything else because, like, you know, my family, we have partners, you know, but I have my daughter, their husbands, then their children. We are all living together, almost like a grand family of diverse religions, places, cultures, attitudes, and different attitudes to work. I think this is what I see. I think this landscape is not a planned landscape. This landscape is a grown landscape. And I think that's what I like. I like is the heterogeneous homogeneity.
But I don't know if you've answered my question, sir. So is that you're trying to say that you can't urban plan things? You've got
to... No. I do urban planning. I started a planning school.
Exactly.
So I do plan. No, but I do the plans. I do metropolitan plans. And I also do the poor housing. And I think the undercurrent of that is the same. That human being, natural resources, and the conditions about how can they use time, space, functions, and multiple activities comfortably and in a without losing time and energy.
You can do both.
Question is not what you want to do. What is it that you want to learn? And I think in life, one must continuously learn and grow. So I always take a challenging project. And I take that challenge and find the way that I can do something which I had not done before.
So you're now over 90. You're extremely young. So what are your plans for the future?
Make everybody happy as long as I'm there. What else? I think old age creates worries for everybody. So best way is that to make them happy, share with them maximum things that you have so that they are also happy and I am also happy so that I can be remain young and they can grow with me.
Mr. Doshi, thank you very much for talking to us in conversation with.
Thank you, madam. Thank you so much.